Yashodanandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yashodanandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Gopi Janda Vallava Girivara Dhari Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Kunja Vihari
Jayam Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivraja Kacharya Ashtotara Shatashishimad His Divine Grace A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jayam Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivraja Kacharya Ashtotara Shatashishimad His Divine Grace Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Iskon Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Garantarashiman Bhagavatam Ki Nitai Gaura Premanandi Oh glory to the assembled devotees Oh glory to the assembled devotees Oh glory to the assembled devotees Oh glory to Shishiguru and Shigoranga
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Reading from Shivam Bhagavatam, Canto 10, the status quo, Chapter 20. The rainy season and the autumn in Vrindavan. Text number 14 and 15. Text number 14.
Sarit bhi sangata shindus chukshobha swanor swasanor miman Akwa yogi apakwa yoginas chittam kamaktangu najuk yatha.
Translation. Can you tell them to be quiet?
Where the rivers joined the ocean, it became agitated. It waves blown about by the wind, just as the minds of an immature yogi becomes agitated because he's still tainted by lust and attached to the objects of sense gratification.
Text number 15.
Girajo Varsadharabhir Hanyama nana bibhyutu. Hanyama nana bibhyutu. Abibhuja mana bias Abibhuja mana bias no. Abibhuja mana vyasanair. Jata doksha jachetasa. Girajo varshadhara bhir. Hanyamana nabivyatu. Abibhuja mana vyasanair. Yatta dosha yachetasa. Girajo varshadhara bhir. Hanyamana nabibhyatu. Abibhuja mana vyasanair. Yatta dosha yachetasa.
Please chant.
Abibhuja mana vyasanair. Yata doksha yachetasa. Girajaha.
The mountains.
Varshadhara bhi.
By the rain-bearing clouds.
Hanyamanaha.
Being struck.
Navidyatu
did not shake.
Abhibhujamana
being attacked.
Vyasanai
by dangers.
Jatha
as
adokshaja chetasa.
Those whose minds are absorbed in the Supreme Lord. Translation and purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Just as devotees whose minds are absorbed in the personality of Godhead remain peaceful even when attacked by all sorts of dangers, the mountains in the rainy seasons were not at all disturbed by the repeated striking of the rain-bearing clouds. Purport. When splashed by torrents of rains, the mountains are not shaken. Rather, they are cleansed of dirt
and become resplendent and beautiful. Similarly, an advanced devotee of the Supreme Lord is not shaken from his devotional program by disturbing conditions, which instead cleanses his heart of the law of the dust of attachment to this world. Thus, the devotee becomes beautiful and resplendent by tolerating difficult conditions. In fact, a devotee accepts all reverses in life as the mercy of Lord Krishna, realizing that all suffering is due to the sufferer's own previous misdeeds. So the two verses together again. Where the river joined the ocean, it became agitated, its waves blown about by the wind. Just as the mind of an immature yogi becomes agitated because he's still tainted by lust and attached to the objects of sense gratification. Just as devotees whose minds are absorbed in the personality of Godhead remain peaceful even when attacked by all sorts of dangers, the mountains in the rainy seasons were not at all disturbed by the repeated striking of the rain-bearing clouds. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Ummilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Shrimate Ramapada Swami Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swamin Iti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashatyade Shatarine Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyasya Kripa Sindhubhya Evasya Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. So, two different levels of transcendentalists, of yogis, have been described in these analogies that Srila Sukadev Goswami uses to describe the rainy season in Vrindavan. The first is, in the words of Srila Sukadev Goswami, the immature yogi, who's still afflicted by desires and attachments. And the other one, so he compares the immature yogi as when small rivers, they come into the big body of water. In this case, the analogy is using an ocean, but also described as a bigger river or a big body of water. So when you have all these tributaries, rivers, they fall into the big body of water, usually creates all this disturbance. Waves and the coloring of the water changes. You know, you see that in the big deltas in the ocean, and also when rivers merge, you know, small rivers merge. So the disturbance is compared that to the mind of the neophyte yogi who is agitated by all kinds of attachments and desires. And then Srila Sukadev Goswami talks about these devotees who are adoksha chetasa, who their consciousness is fully focused or fully absorbed in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And these fully absorbed devotees, they're compared to a mountain that, although is hit by these torrents of rain, the mountain doesn't become at all move. It's steady. So the mountain is fixed. It's steady. It's fixed in its position. Krishna describes, uses the term of sthita pragya in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita when describing a sage or a yogi of a steady mind. His mind is perfectly steady. It doesn't become disturbed. It doesn't become disturbed by the incessant flows of thoughts or circumstances or desires. It just remains steady, perfectly steady. So sthita pragya means the steady mind of an advanced devotee or an advanced yogi. In the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna goes a little further in describing these two different types of yogi to instruct Arjuna that basically ones have to be pretty much aware of one's position, one's level, one's capacity. Krishna described that there is similar. There is two types of yogi: one who is a beginning, and the one who is achieved perfection or achieved, you know, the highest level of practice of yoga. He described that yoga is like a ladder. So there is a beginning, and then you gradually climb to the top of the yoga ladder. The two terms that Krishna uses in the sixth chapter is yoga ruruksha and yoga rudra. Yoga ruruksha is the beginning stages of yoga, and yoga rudra is the highest stages of yoga. So, Krishna says, Arurukshor Muner Yogam, Arurukshor Muner Yogam, Karma Karanan Uchate. So, for the neophyte, this Rurukshor, Yoga Rurukshor, for the neophyte yogi, then karma karanam, work is to be the means. So one cannot stop work. Let me go back a little bit. The context in which Krishna is answering this, is explaining this to Arjuna, is because Arjuna is trying to understand this principle of working and renunciation. It was a very difficult thing to put together, because renunciation is associated to yoga. In fact, Krishna explains that to be a yogi, you have to be renounced. You have to renounce the pursuit or the desires for sense gratification. That is a basic principle of yoga. The goal is not sense gratification. The goal is self-realization, is elevation of consciousness. So that's right from the outset. So in general, if one doesn't have a proper understanding of the process, then it becomes, you know, in general, when you don't have a good understanding of something, you generalize. You have a general definition without going into the more specific principles. You tend to simplify it in a generic way. So in general, we understand as a spirituality as giving up this world, renouncing the world. We hear that sense gratification and spiritual life, they don't go well together. They don't mix. It's an incompatible thing, the opposite thing. So naturally, if you're going to be into a spiritual life, you have to give up all this mundane stuff. That is the idea of spirituality, that in general is there. It's a very general understanding. So Arjuna has that difficulty. Arjuna, after confronting the reality of the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he wanted to give up. He wanted to engage in simply his, you know, the spiritual pursuit that he understood was to be renouncing work, renouncing his fighting and working and the thing, you know. Because of being educated in Vedic culture, the understanding is this basic principle that all these engagements in the material world, they're all temporary. That the actual reality is a spiritual reality that is eternal. And the goal is just to you gradually move yourself to that position and obtain perfection. So Arjuna, you know, had that sort of general understanding. I have to renounce in order to just dedicate myself into spiritual activities. And Krishna called him a fool, and Arjuna was a little puzzled. And so he presented questions. Krishna started to explain a process of yoga, but at the same time explained to him that he doesn't have to renounce his work, he should carry his work in this process of yoga. So as they go deeper into the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is explaining more and more to Arjuna, what does he mean by that? Because Arjuna has the difficulty of, okay, Krishna, why are you telling me? You're telling me that this process of self-realization, the process of becoming Krishna consciousness, is the real thing, is the purpose of life. Then why are you asking me at the same time to go and fight this ghastly war? I don't understand. Please explain. This doesn't seem compatible. How can you, while being engaged into this mundane stuff, can be in a Krishna conscious, you know, in Krishna consciousness? So when it comes to this part, the sixth chapter, Krishna basically concludes this whole part of the Bhagavad Gita that goes from chapter 1 to chapter 7 or to chapter 6, and explains to Arjuna that renunciation, what's real renunciation? Real renunciation means that you just renounce this pursuit for sense gratification. And it doesn't necessarily mean you have to renounce work. You can work without that goal. You work, or you whatever you do in yoga, the goal is to obtain or to link again, to obtain that ultimate connection with the Absolute Truth. So he comes to explain to Arjuna that first, okay, renunciation is necessary, but renunciation doesn't mean to give up work. Renunciation means to give up the desires for sense gratification. So you can work or you can be renounced, and the principle still remains the same. Because if you don't have the principle, then you could be renouncing work and still holding some desires for sense gratification or selfish desires. And that's not that highest platform of yoga. Because you can become agitated. You can still be afflicted. So, then Krishna explains that then there is these two levels. There's a level of a practitioner of yoga that is still not pure, that is still has desires and have attachments, but have started the process of yoga, meaning that you start to follow rules and regulations, follow certain principles that allow you to curb these desires, to control them, and to gradually elevate yourself in the process of purification and becoming free from the influence of these desires. So that's the yoga ruruksha process. So Krishna says, for one who is neophyte in the eightfold of yoga, in this case, Krishna is explaining this Ashtanga yoga. But the principles of yoga are equally applied to the different process of yoga. In this case, we're talking about here Dhyana yoga, but also to Karma yoga, also to Bhakti yoga, to Jnana yoga. All these things apply, the same principle apply. The process is meant for self-realization. So, Krishna tells Arjuna that for those who are neophyte, that is still afflicted, you can still be a yogi. And for them, work is said to be the means. So you have to work. You have to work. And then he says, for one who is already elevated in yoga, yoga rudashya tashyaiva shamakaranan uchate, then cessation of work, cessation of activity is said to be the means. So when you're free from material desires and from attachments, then you can stop working. Then renunciation, full renunciation, or this, the manifestation of giving up work in this world is possible at that stage. So a yogi that is in this stage can choose, because it's in that position it can completely renounce the world and enter into a process of just self-absorption. In the Ashtanga yoga process, this eightfold Ashta Anga. Ashta means eight, Anga means folds or limbs. So in the process of Ashtanga yoga, there is this starboard yama and niyama, then asan, pranayam, then there is, I think it's dharana, and there's different levels of meditation. Dharana, I can't remember. Dhyan. Am I missing one? So there's three deep, once we pass the pranayama, which is the breathing exercise. So yama and niyama means rules and regulations, the do's and don'ts. Then asan, you start to practice the sitting postures or the different postures of yoga. And pranayama is very much connected to the mind with pranayama, with the controlling of the airs. You start to control the mind, and then you can start into the meditation levels, and there's different levels of meditation, all leading to samadhi. So, similarly, as you reach, you know, this level of samadhi, full absorption, then the advanced yogi can fully renounce the world and enter into this, what is called bhajan, or this very self-absorbed meditation, or can remain working for the benefit of others, to show by example, continue involving themselves in the world. So both as sannyasis or renunciants, but one type of sannyasi preaches for the benefit of others, for the benefit of showing example. And also, we have a great personalities. Krishna speaks earlier in the third chapter of the example of Janaka Maharaj, who was in such position of self-absorption, but remained as a king, performing his duties for the benefit of others. But the principle is that there is these two levels. When one comes from the position of beginning, and then we have to come to the highest stage of yoga practice, which is this full absorption, this adokshaya chetasa, that one's consciousness is fully absorbed in the Supreme Lord. So, for us, so then Krishna tells Arjuna, you are in this yoga ruruksha, because you're still afflicted by, the reality is that Krishna is teaching, is for us. Krishna is engaging Arjuna, his dear devotee, to help us, to give us the for the purpose of giving us this instruction. Because the majority of people in this world, conditioned souls, are in this position of being afflicted by material desires and attachments. That is a definition of, that's why we're in this world. If we are free from material attachments and desires, we're not supposed to be in this world. But when we come to this material world, it's because we're trying to fulfill a desire. Krishna says that in the Gita, Icha Dvesha Samutena. We originally come to this world with this icha and dvesha, which is hate and desire. So we want something. We want Krishna's position. We want the experience. We want to be Krishna. And therefore we hate Krishna. Very heavy, you know, the actual reality that brings us into this material world. So conditioned souls, for conditioned souls, this is the path. Every single human being is meant to be a yogi. In fact, yoga is the process, the natural process for human beings. Everybody is meant to be a yogi. So for those who have attachments, then here's the process. You work. You work in devotion without the purpose or the desire to enjoy the fruits of your work. So we learn the process of yajna. The process of yajna that Krishna gives for those as, you know, yogis is that sacrifice, this yajna is meant to be enjoyed and offered to the Supreme Lord. So it's a perfect system. And actually, it's not saying the perfect, it is the system. In the Ishupanishad, it is explained that there is no alternative for this system. The Ishupanishad calls this system the Ishavasya system. There is no alternative. There is no alternative for human society and human beings but this system. So these two levels are there. So one is okay. We still become afflicted. We still become agitated. So the minds of the neophyte yogi is described that still there's agitation. But in comparison, when you reach that position of a steadiness, that doesn't anything move you, any danger, any conflicts, any difficulties disturbs you, disturb your devotional service. When we're neophyte, anything that circumstances can disturb our practices. And therefore, in the neophyte stages, our devotional service is called anishtata bhakti. Anishtata means it's unsteady. You know, you go into peaks and valleys. And that's according to the flow, the interactions of your desires and attachments with the world. We go into this anishtata bhakti. But if we practice, if we follow the process, which is what is here, you know, Krishna explained this process of working in devotion. If you follow the process, this and what is given to us is this bhajana kriya and anartha nivritti or sadhana bhakti. In the terms of Ashtanga Yoga, is this Nyama and Niyama, rules and regulations. So if we follow this process, we become purified. And as we become purified, basically, our faith becomes more and more steady. So from this Anishtata Bhakti, we come to the position of Nishta Bhakti, which means is the next stage. It becomes steady. Our devotion becomes steady. And then keeps growing and growing and growing until we become fully free from any trace of material desires and attachments. So from Nishta goes to Ruchi, and from Ruchi goes to Asakti, and from Asakti goes to Baba, and from Baba goes to Prema. So these are, when you go to Prema, then there's no trace. You're perfectly pure. And you're perfectly absorbed. In the others, there's small chances of fall down, but still you could fall down. Even from the Baba, we hear the example of Maharaj Bharat, who failed from this position of Baba. which is a high, 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 very elevated position of absorption and connection with the Supreme Lord. But this is the analogies, you know, just highlighting or comparing the experience of the rainy season in Vrindavan to these two different levels of yoga practice. Any comments or questions? Naveen, you're going to check this microphone is not sounding. Try it. Does it have a red button? It should be number one. Then check inside that at the two. On, yeah, two are on. Does it have the red, the green light? Okay, one.
Hare Krishna. In terms of the Isha Vasya principle, for practitioners of other quote unquote religions of the world, is it that they practice their religion a certain way so they will obtain a or attain a different destination, or they will not attain any destination, or any, you know, number of possibilities, like you mentioned Isha Vasya principle is the only sort of progression for devotees. So in light of that, could you give some. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Because it's a principle, it's universally applied. The Ishabhasya principle, Ishabhasya idan sarvan, Yat kincha bhagyatam jagat tiena tyaktena bunchita mat, what is it, mat tyaktena bunchita mat gata. So, but in general, what he says, the principle is that one has to understand that first that there is God, first thing. There is a supreme being. Isha is the supreme controller. And that supreme controller is the owner of everything. Everything belongs to him. The whole universe, the whole cosmic manifestation belongs to him. And then the other principle is this tena tyaktena bunchita, that for each one of us, God is providing, and He provides a particular quota. We all have a quota that God is maintaining all living entities. He's the maintainer and the protector, and each one of us is providing something. And the whole principle is that it's all perfect. There's no, it's exactly perfect, completely perfect, what God provides. And that's in the introduction verse in the Upanishad, that is, what is it? How is it, the beginning? The introduction verse of the Upanishad. Om Purnan Adapurnam Idam. Purnam Purnam Udachate Purnashan Purnam Adaya Purnam Evan Vashishate. That everything that comes from Him is complete, and everything that comes from Him is perfectly complete. So everything that He does is perfect and complete. So what He is giving us is perfect and complete. Individually, is perfect and complete. So we don't have to look to the side and say, oh, actually I would prefer to have that quota than this my quota. You know, why this person have a better quota than mine? We don't have to analyze. The quota for this person is perfect, the quota for my person is perfect. If I have the quota of someone else, it will be a disaster for my life. It won't work. It won't give us the desire. We won't be in this Ishabasha principle. We'll be in something else, which is what the Upanishad defines as avidya, the process of avidya. The process of avidya, and he have these two processes, vidya and avidya. Vidya means that you don't have connection and you don't follow by ignorance, you don't follow this Ishabasha principle. And vidya means that you follow the Ishabasha principle. So this Ishabasha principle is embedded in all religions. It's the essence of religion. Now, that in some religious process, this Ishabasha process is not followed, that's not a reflection of the religious process. That's a reflection of the practitioners. Because even in our tradition, we can also be so-called practicing, you know, Vaishnavism or Gaudiya Vaishnavism, and still being ignorant and neglectful of this Ishabasha principle and be afflicted by this avidya. So the process is embedded, it's universal. It should be accessible to certain degree. And after the person goes deep, Prabhupada explains that Krishna leads them to something higher and higher and higher. And the highest thing is Krishna says, you know, the yoginana pisharvesham, you know, those who fully come to the position of bhakti. What is it? Adoksha chetasa. That's the ultimate thing. So it should lead you to that, because it's a universal principle if they actually follow. Is that clear?
Hare Krishna. So thank you for that answer, but I was just going to say that in some ways, Srila Prabhupada did establish Varna Ashram Dharma then, because he gave the knowledge about it in his book. Like, there has been a statement that he said that he was not able to establish Varna or Ashram. But if these are universal principles, then they exist even without our applying them, as long as we are educated about it and we can educate others about it, I guess. Okay.
Yeah, that's a good observation. And is everything, Prabhupada say, everything that you need to know is in my books. So it's there. We just need to, you know, apply it. So it's not, you know, in conversation with Prabhupada sometimes says, you know, it's not possible. Sometimes it is possible, you know. It was because of us. So, you know. So the at the end, you know, is part of our service to being able to fully apply, you know, Prabhupada's teachings, because those are the teachings that are will lead this golden age within Kali Yuga for the next 10,000 years that fulfill Lord Chaitanya's purpose. So. It's all there in Srila Prabhupada's books. And he is the preeminent acharya of the age of Kali. Because of that. Thanks.
All right, Krishna Prabhu, thank you for your class. You were mentioning art. Krishna was encouraging Arjuna to think of him even on the battlefield. And that's the point that really highlighted to me, because we see all the great saints think of Krishna in the most horrible, difficult conditions. And as far as this verse is concerned, one thing that came to mind is Jitendra, ever since I've been a Krishna consciousness associated with him, he will always say two phrases. There's a difference between devotional service and commotional service. Now, this verse uses the analogy of a mountain. The one thing that came to mind, I'm not sure if you heard the English phrase, making a mountain out of a molehill. That means people make problems seem bigger than they actually are. But we see that the great saints who engage in devotional service, they make molehills out of mountains. And we see the great sinners, they make mountains out of molehills. They make problems seem bigger than they actually are. Prahlad was thrown off a mountain. He was like, he had no animosity towards his father. He says it's no big deal. But we see in a pastime like Devananda Pandit in the Chaitanya Bhagavad, I believe Madhya Khan chapter 21, Devananda Pandit was a celibate monk who gave Bhagavatam his entire life. He had a school. He would teach Bhagavatam class to young students. One day Srivasa Thakur heard the Bhagavatam from outside. He entered the class. When he sat back in the class, in the back of the class, he was crying, he was sighing, he was so in love with the Bhagavatam. But Devananda Pandit, he was disturbed. He was like, who is this nuisance causing a problem? He loves Bhagavatam too much. Let's get rid of him. So the students grabbed him by the hands and legs and literally threw him outside of Bhagavatam class. And Lord Chaitanya, it's a long story, winded up blasting him for that, criticizing him. And we see this is the pastime. By contrast, we see that Prahlad was at the wrong place at the wrong time, with the wrong person. But because he had the right mentality, love, humility, forgiveness, he was always content. Devananda Pandit, he was associating with Srivasa Thakur, one of the members of the Panchatattva. He was at the right place, at the right time, with the right person. But because he had the wrong mentality, intolerance, something that's like so petty, somebody who loved Bhagavatam, he was like, let's get rid of him. And that's our situation. So my question is that how do we keep things in perspective? Because it seems in Kali Yuga, we always find some problem. Like, we could go to Syria, we could go to Iraq, we could even go to the west side of Chicago and find so much more problems. But that's the tendency, is that how can we keep things in perspective where things could actually be much worse? But there's always, you know, some complaint about something. So how can we deprogram ourselves to be more grateful for devotees and actually say, any association, this is a complete blessing. I'm so fortunate, instead of complaining all the time. Thank you.
Well, it's a natural principle to as you get to appreciate and absorb yourself and commit yourself to the process of devotional service. And as we go in the process of devotional service, that we come purified, you naturally start to become open and more open and appreciate that, have a better clarity and capacity to see reality. And when we do that, then we start to appreciate more and recognize those who are also endeavoring for the same goals. So if we apply the process, we can see that we also cleaning ourselves. We can appreciate this omagyana timerandasya, that I was actually completely blinded. I was in a very bad situation. And because of the mercy of a devotee, now I have a chance. So I'm becoming cleansed, I'm becoming purified. So when I maintain that position and that thinking, then I can become, I can have empathy and I can have understanding and tolerance of other devotees who are also going through the process of purification, and therefore appreciate. Here is another, you know, a courageous soul that is trying to break from, that is, you know, that making an attempt. If you see devotees that are consistently holding to the community, the association of devotees, even by being afflicted by their conditions, material conditions. Just because these devotees have some attachment and attraction to Krishna, to the community, to the temple, you have to sort of appreciate that part and in one sense sees, you know, that, okay, you know, this devotee is in the shower, I'm in the shower, we're not here considering, okay, who's more dirty than the other one, you know. I mean, if you're in the shower and cleansing yourself, then that's very good. That's what Prabhupada would tell someone who criticized his disciples. Why are you criticizing someone by someone being dirty when the person is in the shower cleansing themselves? So we learn to appreciate that. We learn to appreciate devotees because that shows that we're appreciating what devotional service does to us. If we take it for granted, if we have this superficial approach to it, then that means that we're very immature. But that is just that. It's immaturity. And an immature state is meant to mature gradually. So, you know, we all understand it's just a process. It's just what it is. You know, I'm going through, someone is going through, maybe someone is, you know, is more, the bod is just very fresh and young, and this bod is a little more open. But, you know, so, and then some bod is a little mod, and then, you know, and naturally the bod, if it's in the proper space, hearing and chanting like that, naturally will open and eventually will fully become a flower. So we appreciate that. We appreciate people who are holding to the path of devotional service somehow or other. In being engaged. Okay, thank you so much, Prabhus, Matajis. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Granthara Shriman Bhagavatam ki jai.